From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday, which means it's time for our reporter roundtable. We have a lot to get to this week in terms of news headlines and what happened. So let me introduce our panel. Kevin Richert, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News. Kelsley Mosley Morris with the Idaho Capital Sun. Kalama Hines, reporter with EastIdahoNews.com. And Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief at the Idaho Press and the voice of the Eye on Boise blog. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Oh, it's been a long week. So, Kalama, let's head over to you in East Idaho, because I do want to start with talking about a recent ruling in the case with Lori Vailo and Chad Daboll. So the judge ruled and no cameras in the courtroom.
Yeah, so that was actually the ruling that came out, I believe it was the end of last week, that he was going to discontinue allowing publication of video from court proceedings because he feels they infringed on the Vailo and Daboll hearings from getting fair trials. There have actually been new developments in the past few days, though. The attorneys for Chad Daboll have actually requested the trials be separated, and he has actually requested cameras be allowed in the Daboll hearings.
Chad Daboll has requested this.
Yes, that's correct. Chad Daboll's attorney has requested that Lori and Chad be separated and that cameras be allowed in the Daboll proceedings.
So this will then, I'm assuming, go under advisement to the judge, and then the judge will rule on whether to separate the two cases and then whether to put cameras in the courtroom for this particular case.
Yeah, it's a strange process. The request to have cameras removed, that decision, it took a couple of weeks. So I would imagine this decision, because it's separating the hearings, or separating the defendants, would probably take a bit longer, probably a few weeks to determine if the trial should be separated and if cameras should then be allowed in the Daboll proceedings.
Go ahead, Betsy.
I think it's important to note that the judge's order with respect to the Lori Vailo trial also bans all still photography.
Yeah, that's correct.
And there was a valiant effort to fight this move by 30 Idaho news organizations led by the East Idaho News, and the judge ruled against all of us. I think it's unfortunate. I think that not just video, but also any visual record of what happens in court is helpful to people to understand what's really happening. And the most accurate representation of what happens in court going out to the people is what we need for citizens to be able to observe their government and feel confident in it. So I think it's a shame, but our Idaho cameras in the courtroom rules do leave it entirely at the discretion of the judge. And so the judge is entirely within our rules to make this ruling.
And Kalama, Did Chad Daboll's attorneys give any reasons as to why they now want these cases to be separate? And have we heard from Lori Vailo's attorneys about this?
So we have not heard from the Vailo attorneys yet. The filing, I don't believe we even have access to the filing for the attorney's request to separate the hearings. This just happened yesterday. So this is a very new change to everything that's going on with the Vailo and Daboll hearings.
Right. So we'll just have to wait on that. And I tell you, this case is never dull, to say the least. I do now want to head to elections, with our upcoming midterm elections. Betsy, you're writing a series in regards to elections, and I know you recently published an article about the governor's race. So Governor Little is facing four challengers, and we should note that we will not get a debate this year.
That's right. Governor Little has declined to debate his opponents both in the primary and in the general election. And there were still two candidates who did want to debate initially, the Democratic nominee Stephen Hite and the independent Ammon Bundy. But when Stephen Hite found out that he would just be having a one-on-one debate with Ammon Bundy, he declined as well. And you can't have a debate with just one candidate. So there are no debates at all, which is a shame. My series is, I am well into it now, and this story on the governor's race, which ran on last Sunday, was probably the biggest one out of the series. But we have already run stories on the Secretary of State's race, the Lieutenant Governor's race, the Treasurer's race, the Controller's race, and the Attorney General's race. Coming up this Sunday, I will have my story on the Senator Crapo's reelection bid with four challengers. Still coming are the other two congressional races, the superintendent of public instruction race, and the constitutional amendment that is on our November ballot to let the legislature call itself into special session. And see all the stories in the series by going to idahopress.com/elections.
And it's a good way to know who's running, I think, Betsy. So, I mean, that's important in particular because some races, as I mentioned, will not get debates this year because some candidates, some incumbents have decided they don't want to do that.
That's right. And some candidates are campaigning more actively than others. But I do think it's really important for people to know who these candidates are, what they stand for, and what they say they want to do in office. In some cases, with a fact check to show whether they really can do that or not. And that is something that I think is highlighted in, for example, my governor's race story looking at the proposals for Mammoth Bundy. So I recommend reading all the news coverage to be an informed voter before you go to the polls.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kelsey, Idaho State, well, former Idaho State Representative Aaron Von Ellinger was convicted of rape, raping a then teenage intern. There is an update on this case.
Yeah, as expected, he put in a notice of appeal to the Idaho Supreme Court, which is mostly a formality at this point. You have to do that within 42 days of your judgment, which happened at the end of August, I think. He was sentenced to 8 years fixed and 20 years indeterminate, for a total of 20 years. It was 12 years indeterminate. And so he has appealed that ruling, and it takes a little bit to get a full appeal going in the Supreme Court. So that's going to take a couple months, but he has used the same arguments he used in the motion he made for a new trial, which was a couple months ago, saying that they shouldn't have admitted certain testimony from one of the sexual assault nurses who examined the rape victim. And that they should have declared a mistrial when the victim didn't testify, and a couple other things related to, you know, the constitutional rights of the person to confront their accuser. And that all was thrown out by the judge, basically, when he declined to entertain that motion. And so he's just saying to another court that he believes that was an error. So we'll probably see a full appeal on that within the next couple months, probably by the end of the year. And then that will be assigned to an appeals court and we'll go from there.
Okay. Kevin, get us updated on enrollment numbers in higher ed. We do know now that some of the private colleges and universities in Idaho have lower enrollment numbers than they've had in the past.
Right. So we're only getting a smattering of the numbers so far, Gemma. We'll get the numbers for the public institutions like Boise State and University of Idaho and Idaho State University. Those will come later next month. But we do know about the College of Idaho in Caldwell and Northwest Nazarene University in Nampa, both of them reporting enrollment decreases. Now, for College of Idaho, it comes down off of record enrollment figures from a year ago. For NNU, it continues kind of a trend in enrollment declines that actually predates the pandemic. And what's interesting to me with both of these institutions is that smaller colleges and universities have been hit somewhat hard by enrollment declines during the pandemic. And there's been some questions about around the country whether that's going to cause some of these smaller colleges and universities to close their doors. I'm not saying that NNU or College of Idaho is anywhere near that kind of a place, but smaller institutions have had a hard time hanging on to enrollment. So that's what we know about the two private schools in Canyon County, and we'll eagerly wait for the numbers from the public institutions. They're saying that they're expecting some good numbers this year, so we'll have to wait and see.
And Kevin, when should we? Oh, go ahead, Betsy. Sorry.
Well, I think that's really interesting, Kevin, because I know we've heard over the years from our public institutions that there is a cycle to higher education enrollment, and that when the economy is good, enrollment goes down because more people go to work. And when the economy is bad, enrollment goes up because more people want training to get a different or better job.
Yeah, and especially for the community colleges. You're absolutely right.
Right. And it's kind of the opposite of what the resources are, because when the economy is bad, they have more students to cope with. It'll be interesting to see how this affects them if we do head into a recession.
Right. And especially, you know, with this kind of job market, is this a market where, you know, young adults are saying, hey, I'm just going to go straight into the workforce, or I'm going to go into the workforce for a gap year because I can make some money. We'll see. And we'll know towards the end of October is when we'll look at the numbers for the universities.
And Kevin, has there been any discussion in regards to, when we talk about number of students going to college or not going to college, you know, one of the things that I think hasn't come up in the discussion yet is birth rate, because we are racing kind of towards, in the next probably four years, where our birth rate number in the United States went down dramatically. Starting in like 2007, 2008. And I wonder right. how that will impact, like, you know, higher ed, because I have a kiddo born in that year, and then I have one, you know, 3.5 years behind. There is a definite difference in the number of students, even in these K through 12 grades.
No question about it, Gemma. And that's something the State Board of Education has already studied. They did a long-term enrollment projection, and how that birth rate might affect Boise State, Idaho State, University of Idaho. So yeah, it's on the radar, and it's definitely a factor. And it's a factor not just for institutions in Idaho, but it's a national trend too. What it means is there's going to be a lot of competition for a limited number of students.
Yeah, 100%. Kelsey, I want to begin this segment talking about a story that you wrote earlier this week that has gained not only national attention, but it gained the White House's attention as well. Tell us about this memo the University of Idaho sent to its employees.
Yeah, this is an email that I got over the weekend from an anonymous person who got this email from the general counsel at the University of Idaho that was sent out to all employees, advising them not to talk about camp council, promote any kind of abortion subjects at the university while they're on university time, basically, or using university resources. And they went a step further and said that contraception kind of was wrapped in that too. I am not clear on whether the university itself ever dispensed any kind of hormonal birth control, like the pill or anything, but mm-hmm. They said that should not be a thing, even if they never have. That doesn't go for those student health services because they're contracted with Moscow Family Health, which is a private private practice, but they are not supposed to dispense any kind of free condoms unless it's for the spread of stopping the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. And so it was like 6 pages long of detail about how the No Public Funds for Abortion Act that was passed in 2021 during the legislative session, kind of, they needed to be aware of that law and to be very cautious about what they say moving forward in class. And any discussion needs to be very neutral and just at the topic at hand. And so it's created a lot of consternation among professors who are not sure what this means for them in terms of class, and students who are not sure where they can get contraception still. And I think it's caused a lot of confusion as well.
Well, and I think it's caused a lot of chaos in some ways, yeah. Kelsey, because once you published this article, you heard from the University of Idaho. You even heard from some Republican lawmakers who are saying, well, maybe we need to tweak this law that we passed in 2021.
Yeah, and it's kind of the same old story with these abortion laws that I think they passed during a time that was pre-Roe being overturned, and they didn't really think through a lot of the logistics of mm-hmm. what those bills would mean if they became more salient, if the national law changed. And so they particularly pointed out in the memo that you know, these laws are untested in court, and that's part of why they're being so cautious, is they don't have a lot of case law to point to. And some of the contraception stuff is pointing to like a 1970s law that it seems like has not been enforced up until now about contraception, that I think people aren't sure if that applies now because of the new case law at the Supreme Court level. And so they're looking to that and saying, we just want to be, we want to check out all of our boxes and not do any of it, which some people, including former Attorney General Jim Jones, said the other day, like, that's the intent of some of these laws, is to create a chilling effect and make people not want to talk about it ever, or just, you know, mm-hmm. be as safe as possible. And so I think there's some lawmakers certainly who think, you know, we need to go and tweak these things, but there's some who think this is great and that we should go further and ban Plan B. And there's some who want to ban IUDs and go further with these things. So it's another example of how the session is going to be a fight between a lot of these different corners of this debate.
Mm-hmm. And then Kelsey, tell us about the White House responding to this memo. I mean, here we are, Little Idaho, this, you know, public university here in Idaho. And then the White House response.
Right. That came through at the same time I was trying to go look up the appeal for Von Ellinger. So I'm like sitting outside of the Supreme Court talking to the White House about this. Like, it was a very weird,
you know, because who
day.
Doesn't do that?
Right. They reached out to me. They come on to give me a heads up that they were issuing this statement, responding to the memo, and kind of using it, it sounds like, as an example of how these situations are shaping up across the country, and how these, what they called extreme abortion bans, are creating these effects in places like higher education. And mm-hmm. I think they just really wanted to highlight that as an example, along with Michigan and Georgia and some of these places where lawmakers are talking about going further with banning contraception. And they just wanted to make that statement, specifically calling out Idaho, where there is an abortion ban. The press secretary also tweeted out my story, which was very strange. Right. And I think they're just using it as a launch point for more of their messaging around how abortion is becoming such an issue for the midterm elections.
So, Kelsey, when you... Oh, go ahead, Kevin.
Well, and I just quickly point out, I mean, while U of I has been the flashpoint nationally and statewide, I mean, this language applies to every public university in the state. We've just have seen U of I in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and here's my question, though, and Kevin or Kelsey, maybe either of you can answer this, is, you know, this idea of you cannot talk about abortion in your higher education classrooms, or you cannot, I guess the word was promote abortion. Discussing this, though, if it comes up, I mean, if you cannot talk about it, can't we argue that that goes against someone's First Amendment rights to free speech?
There has been a lot of talk about that. And I think as far as some of the organizations who are looking at this, I think the ACLU has talked about the free speech portion of this debate. And I think when it comes to that memo and what they were saying, I think they're just trying to be protective of their employees, mm-hmm. and to caution them against saying things that are in favor of abortion or referring people for services. And they did, you know, specify that that's on university time and in classrooms, but I think that is a concern. And especially when higher education institutions are supposed to be a bastion of free speech and ideas, it's particularly concerning for people.
Yeah. Kalama, I want to head back over to you. There is a disturbing story out of Pocatello. This is in regards to a funeral director. I know you and your colleagues have been on the program before talking about this, but for folks who aren't aware, can you give us a brief background and then the latest developments in this?
Yeah, sure. So Downard Funeral Home a search warrant was served at Downard Funeral Homes on September 3rd last year. During their search, officers found 12 bodies in varying states of decomposition. They were not stored inside a refrigerator. One of them was actually just kind of laying in a garage. One of them was sitting in a chair. They also found, I believe it was 61 fetuses in jars. So over the last almost a year now, the Bannock County Prosecutor's Office has been investigating, and actually just before the one-year anniversary of the search warrant, filed charges, 63 misdemeanor charges. And he told me, Bannock County Prosecutor Stephen Herzog told me that he does expect to file felony charges. The misdemeanor charges were filed now because of the statute of limitations. They would have only had a year to file those charges. So misdemeanor charges are coming, and the trial or any court proceedings have actually been delayed because the filing is actually 4,500 pages long, a little more than that actually, for the misdemeanor charges. So I can imagine that any felony filing would be even longer. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, and all of these charges are against the funeral director, correct?
I left that out. So the funeral director, Lance Peck, has owned, or I guess directed, the funeral home since 2014. And around 2018, the Idaho State University actually did a investigation into their cadaver donation program that they had set up with Downard, and found out that bodies that were supposed to be donated to the school were never getting there. And families of the deceased were being informed that bodies were being donated. So the investigation has been very strange so far. Police actually brought in families of deceased who were supposed to be donated to, and it took several weeks to identify the remains of the 12 bodies that were found in the investigation.
So, Clement, it sounds like the Idaho State University kind of inadvertently flagged this, what was going on in this.
Yeah, basically, that they're the ones who alerted the Pocatello Police Department to something being off at Downard. And then not long after that, there were actually reports of a foul smell coming from the funeral home, which is actually right across the street from Pocatello High School. I spoke with some of the students at Pocatello High School, and they said that they had smelled something strange and foul for several months before the warrant was served.
Mm. Well, your heart just goes out to these families. I mean, they expect their loved ones to be cared for, and you know, something like this happens. So appreciate you getting us up to date on that. We are seeing pushes and at times successes in banning books in schools and libraries. And Betsy, during a recent City Club of Boise forum, a panel of experts said that this is not unique to Idaho right now.
That's right. It was a real eye-opener. The City Club brought in a national expert from PEN America who talked about exactly what we have seen happening in Idaho, happening all over the country, and gave lots and lots and lots of examples. And what Jonathan Friedman said is that the difference here, as opposed to past experiences with efforts to ban books, really has to do with internet coordination. People are circulating, sometimes not even organized groups, just lists of books that they think are objectionable on the internet that are offensive. And local people or groups are picking those up and storming their libraries or their local school boards and saying, you have to get rid of these books, in many cases when those books aren't even in those libraries and when they haven't read any of them. It was, and these lists are getting circulated and circulated and circulated online, and it's a movement that's kind of snowballing and building on itself. It was really sobering to hear this, and the panel that the City Club put together in coordination with the Cabin also included a member of the Meridian Library Board and a school librarian from Centennial High School who talked about some very similar things that they're seeing. One of the takeaway messages from the national expert was, read the books. And he talked about some of the books that have been most banned and how they're not really what people are making them out to be, because people who haven't read them are picking out little passages and highlighting those out of context, and they don't give you a sense of what that book is actually about. And it was really sobering. It definitely made me want to read some of these books. And yeah, a very interesting message from the City Club.
And Betsy, I'm curious too. Go ahead, Kevin.
And Gemma, I just wanted to throw in too. I mean, this affects teachers as well. I mean, this crazy, chilling environment that affects how teachers address these materials. Carly Flandreau, a reporter of ours, who is herself a former teacher, she interviewed a middle school English teacher about this for a podcast that she dropped earlier today. So, you know, if you want to get a perspective of how this affects teachers, that's a place to go for that.
Well, and what I think is interesting too, and Kevin, you bring up teachers, but also Betsy, librarians. I mean, in a lot of ways, librarians are almost on the front lines now of these protests. Was that discussed at all during this forum, and how that's impacting librarians?
Yeah, I mean, there are librarians who are leaving their jobs. There are librarians who are being harassed, even physically threatened. Basically, the message was that there are all these different groups behind it, and even things that are not groups, just people who saw something on the internet, but their target in all these cases all across the country is the same. It is schools and librarians, teachers and librarians, and they're coming after them. And frankly, it's frightening. There was also one of the other takeaways, I think, from the session was that parents in Idaho have an absolute right to control what their children read. They do not have an absolute right to control what everyone else's children read. That's the problem, what they're trying to do.
Well, and you know, what else is interesting about this is here we've come through a pandemic where, you know, people wanted to make their own choices in regards to whether their children should be masked or not in schools. And now they want to then say, well, we know what's best for your child when it comes to what they should read. And it just seems like, you know, some folks are speaking out of both sides of their mouths.
Right. And there are also First Amendment concerns here. Public schools are public institutions. They cannot violate the First Amendment. And when you talk about high school kids, they have First Amendment rights themselves. 18-year-olds have a right to decide what they read and not to have somebody else's mom tell them they can't.
And when you tell them that, they're going to pick up the book and read it. just saying. Kevin, I know this isn't banning books, but what is going on with Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan in regards to trying to put a committee together to decide what textbooks are going to be used in the West Ada School District?
Not exactly. She's not really putting the committee together. The West Ada School District is putting it together. But what I found odd, it was really a weird press release that McGeehan's office sent out on Tuesday. So the West Ada School District is putting together a committee to look at curricular materials for kindergarten through fifth grade, reading materials, basically, for literacy classes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this process is going to go on through the next few months, and they want parents to be involved in these meetings between now and January. Well, Janice McGeehan's office sent out a news release about this that basically took the West Ada District's news release and reran it word for word. I mean, just sent it out verbatim with one with one mistake. They said that the new curriculum materials will be put into effect in 2024. It's actually 2023 that the materials will be in place. But, you know, you can't get everything right, I guess, when you copy a news release verbatim sometimes. But anyway, it was very strange that here's Janice McGeehan, a statewide officer, using her office and her bully pulpit to try to recruit parents to join a local curriculum committee. It was a very strange news release. It didn't even really mention McGeehan by name. It was odd. Hmm. And because it was odd, I decided to write that.
Well, you know, Kelsey, talk about the Idaho Supreme Court. It has now pushed a hearing back in regards to an abortion lawsuit.
Yeah, this is the hearing that is happening following the original hearing that they had in August when that was kind of a procedural hearing about the three lawsuits from Planned Parenthood against Idaho for three of its abortion laws, the heartbeat law, which is the civil enforcement mechanism modeled after Texas law, the total abortion ban, which was the trigger ban that is now in effect, as well as the civil enforcement bill and the 6-week ban, which was superseded by the trigger ban. They've consolidated all three of those cases, which they decided to do after that hearing in August. So this will be about all three of those cases and their merits. And each side, Planned Parenthood attorneys and the Attorney General's office and the Idaho legislature's attorneys will both have an hour to make their arguments. The legislature's attorneys and the Attorney General's office will have to split their hour because the legislature intervened in this case to have their own representation. But they'll have an hour to decide whether or not, or to argue whether or not these laws are constitutional, whether they violate, you know, rights to privacy in the Constitution, and particularly with the civil enforcement bill, whether it violates the separation of powers because it relies on criminal code, but it doesn't allow the executive branch to have any enforcement. It's purely civil. So it's not a lot of time to argue on three of those pretty complicated cases, but that's what they'll be doing. They had to push back the hearing a week because one of the members of the court was ill. It was supposed to happen this Thursday, but it will happen next Thursday instead at 9 a.m. We don't really know how long it's going to take them to decide after that, but this is kind of the whole enchilada as far as deciding whether these laws will stand or if they'll take some of them down or change them or what will happen next. So this is the big one to watch.
Okay. So Kevin, State School Superintendent Sherry Ybarra gave out some big raises to the tune of about what, $600,000?
Yeah, so it breaks down into two things. So Ybarra handed out bonuses across the board, 9% bonuses to everybody on her staff. It started before the primary, before she lost in the May Republican primary, and continued after the primary. Now, where the money comes from, it comes from salary savings elsewhere in the department. If you have vacancies, state agencies are allowed to take the salary savings and put it into bonuses. And that's what Ybarra says she's been doing for several years and has been to the tune of like $3 million worth of bonuses over the course of her time in office. But this was the biggest round of bonuses. And that's what kind of caught my eye about these. Again, 9% across the board. It means that some of her top paid employees, the folks in her inner circle, they got bonuses of more than $10,000, including one deputy superintendent who isn't even with the department anymore. He's taken a job as a principal in Pocatello, took a job in Pocatello in June, you know, right after the primary. So, and you factor that in, these bonuses also came on top of pay raises. The legislature approved a 7% pay raise for state employees. Ybarra decided to give that across the board as well. So every employee got a 7% pay raise, and that's permanent. And they got the 9% one-time bonuses. So you're talking about, for some of her inner circle, we're talking about more than $20,000 of new money. And I wanted to compare that with other lame duck state officials. So we know about Lieutenant Governor Janice McGee and what she did with one employee giving her almost like a fourfold pay raise and a full-time job. Mm-hmm. On the other end of that spectrum, maybe Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin, after the primary, he gave out bonuses to his staff of $500 to $1,000. So a lot smaller bonuses than what we're talking about in Superintendent Ybarra's shop.
Those are big numbers, Kevin. I mean,
yeah, that's quite a bit of money.
Yeah. Betsy, the Idaho Department of Lands is looking at closing some land near Mountain Home?
They might have to, and this is not the first place where we've heard of this coming up, that periodically on state endowment lands, the state leaves them open to public access. And this land west of Mountain Home in particular is very popular for target shooting and ATV riding and so on. But it's turned into this giant dumping ground, and they just brought out truckloads of refrigerators and vacuum cleaners and just trash galore. And also people have been driving off-road and causing erosion. And so the department announced that if people don't clean up their act, stop dumping, and stay on trails and roads, they're going to close it to public access, because the purpose of endowment land is to earn money for the school endowment. And they do that through grazing lease fees. But if they have to spend all that money cleaning up trash, they're not going to raise any money for the schools. We have also seen similar concerns come up, I believe, in Boise County with regard to state endowment land. So it's a reminder to people not to abuse our public lands, and particularly our state endowment lands. There's nobody there monitoring them, and they are getting abused.
So, Betsy, has the Department of Lands kind of given a timeline as to when they may have to close these lands?
No, this was a warning. They did a big cleanup and were just stunned that they brought truckloads of trash out. So they said, hey, everybody, your attention, please clean up your act or we're going to have to shut it down. And so there's an ATV organization that's also becoming active in this, trying to encourage people to behave more responsibly with regard to these lands.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, let's talk a little bit more about money, because can you explain this grant program? What Idaho parents are signing up for this, and so then the state has hired a firm to give out the grant money?
Right. So the grant program isn't really new. That was passed by the legislature this year. And what it does is it provides $50 million in federal money for parents to cover some of their at-home education expenses, whether they want to get a laptop for their child or if they want to get some tutoring for their child. But they can get up to $3,000 per family, $1,000 per kid. But what I wanted to drill into in the story I did on Thursday was, who's going to manage this process? And the state hired a company out of New York that will administer these grants and make sure that these 18,000 plus parents who have applied for a share of the money actually get the money, are actually eligible for the money, and get the money in a timely fashion. What I found interesting here, a couple of things. First of all, the company called Primary Class, they weren't the low bidder. I wasn't even terribly close. They're going to get almost $1.5 million to administer these grants. The low bid, I think, came in at a little bit under $1.1 million. So we're talking about a considerable gap in terms of the price. And the State Board of Education went into this bidding process wanting a contractor who had some experience doing this kind of work in other states. Well, Primary Class has no experience doing this in other states. They've done sort of small scale projects, but nothing on a statewide scale. So this is their first statewide contract. And we'll find out pretty soon if their software and their approach to administering these grants works, because some of that money is supposed to start to get out the door and start to get into the hands of parents by early October. So it's a very quick turnaround.
Oh, okay. Kaloma, wrap things up for us, because some big news for the town of Rexburg. They're going to be building a new LDS temple, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Actually, the LDS church just announced recently the location. It's going to be northern Rexburg, opposite side of town of the existing temple there. It's also going to be a three-story building, 130,000 square feet on 16 and a half acres of land. So, I mean, obviously,
that's big.
Temples are always pretty large structures, but this one is going to be quite an endeavor, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And when will construction, do they know when construction will begin and when it's set to open? Any of those dates yet?
You know, as of right now, no. This announcement came just within the past few days. The announcement of a location pretty early in that process. But I know the one in Pocatello that just opened about 8 months ago, it took somewhere around 3 years of construction.
Okay.
So I mean, it's still coming. Rexburg, there is a large LDS community in and around Rexburg. So I'm sure those people are very excited about this.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank all of you for coming on today and getting us up to date. A lot, we covered quite a lot today. So big thanks with Kevin Richard, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, Kelsey Mosley Morris with the Idaho Capital Sun, Kaloma Hines, reporter with EastIdahoNews.com, and Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief of the Idaho Press, as well as the voice of the Eye on Boise blog. Remember, you can go to all of their websites to read all of their stories. I encourage you to do that. Thank you, everyone. Happy Friday. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gemma.
Have a good weekend, Gemma.
You guys have a great weekend.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to Idaho Matters from Boise State Public Radio. I'm Gemma Gaudette.